An appropriate one this week, given all that's gone on over the last few months. We're talking about men's health. Let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
This week is Men's Health Week, and one in which men across Ireland are being urged to know their numbers about their health, whether you're at risk of something, how to spot the signs, and what makes up the biggest threats, I suppose, to men's health across Ireland. Testicular cancer is obviously a big one. We're not going to go into detail about that on this show, but if you scroll back in the Let Me Explain feed, you can hear the episode about my own fight with that kind of cancer and why young men are most at risk. But let's start with Men's Health Week, and I bet you won't be able to guess who started it.
It came from the US, would you believe, in 1998. It was Bill Clinton when he was president. He actually got it into law through Congress.
Finian Murray is a Senior Health Promotion and Improvement Officer with the HSE.
And it was celebrated in the US since 1998, but over this part of the world, it didn't really appear until the mid-2000s. In fact, we didn't start celebrating it until 2005, when we literally had that poster campaign called Hazardous Waste. But ever since then, it's gone from strength to strength, and it's now very much part of our health and wellbeing calendar in Ireland every year. And the main reason why we need to have a focus on Men's Health Week is because, like, men die on average 4 years younger than women do. We have higher death rates than women for almost all the leading causes of death and at all ages. Sometimes our poor lifestyles, you know, are responsible for our increase in chronic diseases. And then we're not very good at turning up for health services on time. We can leave it late, and by the time we do turn up, you know, the health issue could be a lot worse than what it would have been if we got help earlier. So they're the main reasons why we focus on men's health during Men's Health Week every year. And what's interesting is that it's celebrated now across the world. It's celebrated in pretty much all the English-speaking countries, Australia, New Zealand, ourselves, UK. But it's also, apart from the US, it's also in Germany, and it's in some other countries that are beginning to jump on the bandwagon as well. So it's great that it's becoming a global event. And it always finishes on Father's Day every year, and it always starts the Monday before Father's Day. So Father's Day is the third Sunday of June. So it always begins on the Monday before Father's Day. So obviously next Sunday is Father's Day, which is the 16th of June. So this is the first day then of Men's Health Week.
And talk to me about that idea of men dying younger, because I feel like it's something a lot of us know about and know there's a few differences there. Is it just down to that, or not just that, but, you know, the major cause that men don't get checked as quickly, as opposed to men being, you know, more liable to catch a chronic disease?
Well, there's also a bit of masculinity at play here as well, in that, you know, men are more likely to take a risk with their health in order to maybe prove themselves to be more masculine. For example, you know, young lads driving out in the middle of the night playing chicken, for example, you know, that is an unhealthy behavior, but they're using it to kind of show off their kind of machoism type thing. So there's an element of that to it. And you know, even when we were growing up, we're socialized into, you know, believing that we have to be tough. We have to look after our own problems. We don't need to be looking for help. We've got to be like a tough little soldier. And that attitude then carries, you know, with us into adult life. So then when we feel we need help, we don't go looking for it. So some of it is around the masculinity, and that masculinity has an impact on men's health. And I suppose there's the whole nature versus nurture, you know, like levels of testosterone would be more harmful to your health than estrogen, for example, you know.
Do you think, is there an element also as well of, we tend to look at young men and say, well, you're grand, you're fine. I remember going to the doctor a few years ago, nothing majorly wrong, which wasn't feeling amazing. And he sort of looked at me and said, like, you know, what are you doing here? You want bloods and stuff. Why are you here? Like, it's not just the men there. It's almost like a societal thing.
Yeah, yeah. And some of that, what we call, it's collusion with the medical profession in the construction of masculinity. You know, that the doctors themselves are kind of feeling, you know, you have to be, you know, a tough man. You don't really need to be looking for help when you're so young. You should be okay, you know, that kind of way. But the fact that you're in the doctor's, in a surgery at all, should actually tell the doctor that you actually felt the need to come looking for help, and he should be, or she should be, willing to provide it much easy, no questions asked type thing, you know, because the amount of men that should be there that don't turn up, you know, is phenomenal.
So look, there's loads to cover when it comes to men's health, but the two leading causes of death in Ireland every year are cancer and heart disease, combining to cause in the region of 60% of deaths every single year, the next leading cause being respiratory diseases at around 13%. So the big two cause 6 in 10 deaths, but the good news is that for many people, you can drastically reduce the chances of dying from those causes with fairly simple lifestyle changes. Here's Finian again after I asked him how we can keep the ticker ticking.
Heart health is one of the things that we cover in the Action Man booklet. We have a little Action Man booklet that we brought out from NCLB last year, and we've redone it again for this year. And there's a full section on heart health in the booklet. And basically what we're saying, you know, it's called the heart of the matter. And what we're saying is, you know, that there are loads of things we can do to maintain a healthy heart, you know. Well, the first thing, of course, would be to stop smoking, because, I mean, the evidence is all showing that, you know, that cigarette smoking, tobacco smoking is very hard on the heart. Even to the whole thing about alcohol as well, you know, that we should try and keep within the recommended health limits for alcohol. So that's 70 standard drinks for a man a week. So that's like, what, 8 pints, you know, and it's not a target. You're not supposed to, if you wake up on Saturday and you say, I've had no pints at all this week, I better have 8 pints. It's not like that. Spread them out over the week and have days when you have no alcohol. Then also keep an eye on your weight, you know, keep an eye on your, like, especially, you know, that area around your middle, your waist measurement, we call it, you know, but it's not your waist, it's your waist across your belly button. That should be pretty much around, you know, 37 inches, 93 centimeters, and try and keep it, you know, like 37 inches or less. Eat healthy, you know. So, for example, we found that, you know, but I think it's something like 8 out of 10 men don't eat the recommended amount of fruit and vegetables every week, you know. So that's something that we are falling behind on. And, you know, so it's important to eat healthily. If you heard of the food pyramid, you know, the food pyramid where fruit and vegetables are the most important shelf, and then you have the carbohydrates and so on. And then you cut down on things like, you know, like kind of saturated fats like butter and so on. So saturated fats in particular would be damaging for the heart. Then, of course, physical activity. Like, healthy eating is only one side of the coin. Physical activity, if you could try and, you know, get about 30 minutes of physical activity every day, well, 5 days a week, or 150 minutes in the week over the 7 days.
And what is that? Like, just if I go for a walk in the morning, is that enough? Or do you need to get your heart more?
No. If you go for a walk in the morning, it doesn't even have to be the full half hour walk. You could go for a 10-minute walk, another 10-minute walk, and another, you know, you can build it up over short spurts as well. But if you could just get to 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, or 150 minutes over the whole week, you know, that's what we recommend. Get enough sleep. Then we're recommending people should get, if you could try and get 8 hours sleep every night, that's also very good for your heart. If you're stressed, because there is a clash between stress and heart health as well. So if you're stressed, you know, try to move away from the situation, and, you know, just go for a walk sometimes can actually clear your head. And, you know, get checked regularly for your blood pressure and your cholesterol. And don't ignore the early, you know, the body's early warning signs. Go to your GP. If in doubt, check it out.
So what then about the other big killer of men in Ireland, cancer? Helen Forrestal is from the Mary Keating Foundation.
1 in 2 people in Ireland are now affected by cancer. Okay, so that's really important to know. That's 50% of our population. And as you said there, 30.8% of cancers in men are from deaths from cancer. So if we looked at the most common cancers among men, prostate is definitely one. So prostate cancer is well known. It's kind of associated with an aging population, but that's not necessarily the case. So prostate is one. Lung cancer is another cancer which has a poor survival rate. Colorectal cancer, which includes bowel and rectal cancer. And pancreatic cancers and esophageal cancers are not talked about a lot because the signs and symptoms are vague, but and the survival rates are very, very poor. They're caught very late. And then I suppose we shouldn't not forget skin cancer. Skin cancer is the most common cancer in Ireland. There's over 11,000 cases of skin cancer diagnosed. 1,000 of those are melanoma cancers, which are the ones that we really, really worry about. But in all, they're the cancers that are common amongst men. And I suppose, do you want to look at the percentage of death, Sean, amongst those?
No, I do, because it's an interesting graph in that your increases, you would your risk of death from cancer increases with age, as you would expect. But then it sort of drops off over 75, that you're at greater risk of dying in that 55 to 74 age group. Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, when we talk about like cancers in the aging population, prostate is one of them, because prostate cancer is kind of that hormonal type cancer where the prostate changes. Usually from the age of 40, 45 onwards, it starts growing. So it starts producing what we call prostate specific antigen, which is kind of, you know, it's not, I suppose it's not a screening tool for prostate cancer, but it's an indicator in some ways as to whether there could be a cancer there or not. Lung cancer, again, is another cancer, you know, of aging, but and I suppose 90% of lung cancers are caused by smoking, but also 10% of lung cancers are not caused by smoking. So it could have been passive smoking or it could be hereditary. Colorectal cancers are an interesting one, because we always thought colorectal cancer was a cancer disease of aging. And our screening program always almost indicates that, in that our screening program last year for bowel cancer was between the age of 60 and 69. Now, we did a campaign, a No Regrets campaign, back in April this year, another iteration of a campaign we did last year in April on bowel cancer. And what we noticed ourselves is we had a group of eight women in one of our groups who had metastatic colorectal cancer. So stage four, incurable cancer, all under the age of 50. So that group of people alone would not have ever been reached a screening age, and yet they're presenting here with an incurable bowel cancer that has spread to other parts of the body. So that's a real worry, you know, and it has become a worry. And our campaign highlighted that, and that the patient voice is really important here. So when a patient speaks about the regrets they have around a particular type of cancer they have, and that it has spread to other parts of the body, that is really worrying. 60% of people are diagnosed in Ireland with stage 3 to 4. Now, that shouldn't be the case. We should be picking that up much earlier. It's the second most common cancer death for men at 11.2%, and the third most common cancer death for women. But, you know, there's other stats here that talk about the National Cancer Registry in Ireland. It shows that, like, you know, cancers, bowel cancer in particular, under the age of 50, it has doubled over the last 25 years between 1994 and 2019. So when we interviewed the people who were part of our campaign, Helen, Jean, this year, they had huge regrets around not really knowing the signs and symptoms, particularly of their cancer. Sometimes ignoring those symptoms, they're around for a while and they didn't do anything about it. Weight loss is one of those, but like a change in bowel habit, blood in poo, a change in even the poo, whether it's kind of a thinner poo. I know we don't all look at our poo, but us as nurses do always. We're very interested in it. But so those kind of change in bowel habits, whether it's a diarrhea or a constipation, that's different for you. Blood and poo is really, really, you know, I always say blood is a red alert. If you see blood anywhere, you've got to go to your doctor immediately. Weight loss that's unexplained, a pain in the abdomen, bloatedness. So those are fatigue as well, another symptom. So those are the kind of signs and symptoms you should be looking out for. And actually paying attention, knowing your body, paying attention, and knowing, you know, that there's something wrong here, it's lingering on, it isn't going away, and go to your doctor. So that's kind of become part of the No Regrets campaign for bowel cancer. And you can imagine listening to somebody who's telling you that they regret not going to the doctor, not taking this seriously, and now look where I am. So we had a petition this year that 5,000 people signed, you know, to actually change the screening age for bowel cancer from, I suppose, in line with European recommendations, which is 50 to 74, actually. But if you looked at Australia and America, their screening age starts at 45. Now, we're a long way from that, but still, I think it's really important for us to know that. Screening saves lives, yes, but knowing your own body and knowing your own symptoms and changes and acting on that saves lives too. And that's really important to remember here.
And this is something I find fascinating in that from speaking to a number of oncologists, it's largely unexplained. Like, they haven't nailed down why people under 50 without any majorly obvious risk factors are suddenly catching this disease beyond thinking it's the environmental factors of the age we live in now.
It's a worldwide trend, yeah. I think that we've busier lives, we're eating more processed foods, we're not necessarily eating like our ancestors would from the land, you know. We're not cycling either the way we used to, you know. So people walked, cycled, there was a lot of, you know, exercise plays a huge part in reducing risks. Alcohol probably has come into play a lot as well. You know, we're in Ireland, we're a nation, dare I say it, of, you know, drinking, and alcohol is a big part of it. And the pub scene is a big part of Irish culture. So alcohol, smoking, diet, and maybe lack of exercise in some cases is all part of it. So obesity is one of the predisposing factors to bowel cancer. Although, you know, I would contradict that because most of the people I know with bowel cancer are not obese.
There are many more major cancers covering men than we have the time to fully cover in this episode, unfortunately. But one of the major ones for older men in particular is prostate cancer.
Prostate cancer is a cancer, I suppose, that occurs usually around the age of 50. And it's like a lot of men at the age of 50 will have prostates that are beginning to grow a little bit. And that's normal. It's natural. So they might have signs and symptoms like going to the toilet a bit more often during the day, getting up at nighttime, maybe having a little bit of hesitancy when they do go to the toilet. So you're standing around thinking, OK, it's not happening. And then it does happen. A lot of men will notice that their flow is weaker than it used to be. Like, they won't be over a wall. It'll be a slow flow and a slow finish. And sometimes they may dribble afterwards. A lot of that could be very normal. But what we actually say to people is, so their signs and symptoms of prostate health or a prostate becoming large, they're not signs and symptoms necessarily of a prostate cancer, because actually prostate cancer may have no symptoms at all. So this is something else we need to remember. If a cancer has no symptoms, we have to actually encourage and empower people to know what's happening in their bodies. So at 50, we would ask people, men in particular, to go to their GPs, have a conversation with their GP about the PSA blood test. Okay, so we talk about, you know, the men's health awareness this year is around know your numbers. A lot of men will know what their PSA is. It's a subject of conversation, thankfully, but they might not know what it means. So have a conversation with your GP at the age of 50 around your need for a PSA blood test. Now I'm going to come back to know your family history, know your body. So with prostate cancer, we can't always identify that there's a problem because there may be no symptoms at all. But if somebody has a brother or a father or an uncle who's had prostate cancer, then their alarm bells should be up. They should actually know that they need to go to their GP at the age of 45 to have a PSA blood test so that it can be some sort of an indication whether there's a problem or not. A PSA on its own is a blood test. It's called prostate-specific antigen. It is not sensitive enough or specific enough to say that, you know, if it's over 2 for a 50-year-old, sorry, if it's over 3 for a 50-year-old man, there's a high risk of cancer. That's not the case. The PSA, together with a digital rectal examination, must be done by a GP or a specialist in that area. And, you know, if there's differences or abnormalities in either of those areas, then there is a referral pathway into a rapid access prostate clinic where that person, that man can be seen, that person can be seen. And I should say anybody born with a prostate really can be seen in that clinic by a specialist and maybe more PSA blood tests done and some other diagnostic tests to see whether whether there's a risk of prostate cancer or not. So that's prostate cancer. A lot of men I know now are actually, you know, chatting about it. I was sitting outside a restaurant the other day, and it's quite one Sunday afternoon in the sun. And it was really nice to hear like three men beside me chatting about their prostate and their PSA. And we say men don't talk, but they do when they have commonalities. And they, you know, they were obviously chatting, they're probably chatting about their health all the time, but actually quite refreshing to hear that, you know. So yeah, prostate cancer is one that is very curable. If it's caught early, 93% of men are will survive well after 5 years and beyond. So when I was in my oncology training many, many years ago, I only saw men who came in with prostate cancer that were really sick. Back in the early 80s, they were very sick. There was no real awareness around prostate cancer. And they turned up with prostate cancer that had spread to many parts of their bones and possibly their lung and their brain. So, you know, things have changed and things have moved on. So that's very curable.
And just before we go, there is a cancer men can get that I actually didn't know we were at risk of.
Men can get breast cancer, okay? Really important to mention, there are about 30 men diagnosed in Ireland every year with breast cancer, and about 7 of those men die. So really important to know that, because not every man knows that, and men should be feeling for lumps and bumps and changes in their breast tissue as well, because we all have mammary glands.
There are resources on all the types of cancer we've mentioned and ones we didn't have the time to get into on mariekeating.ie, and also the Irish Cancer Society as well as the HSC websites. And for more info on Men's Health Week in Ireland, you can go to mhfi.org. Some really interesting numbers there. So for example, the life expectancy of a man is 80.5 years, almost 4 years lower than a woman. And for men living in the most deprived areas, this drops to 79.4 years. But in the most affluent parts of the country, it rises to 84.4. So those living in the most well-to-do areas in Ireland could live 4 years longer on average. That's according to the CSO. And the EU estimates our likely healthy lifespan. So how many of those 80-odd years do you live healthily? And that's just 66.4 years. So there's a 14-year gap between life lived and healthy life lived, which perhaps highlights reasons to look after ourselves that bit better in early life, so we make sure we do enjoy retirement that bit more or at all. On that side note, I've been Sean Defoe. Lachlan Hart has been on sound. For the very last time, our super producer is heading for Pastures News. So I'd like to say a big thanks to you, Lachlan, for your work on the podcast over the past few years. We've had a hell of a blast and made some pretty mad episodes that I don't think two brains put together otherwise might have made. But anyway, you will be incredibly missed, and best of luck with everything in the future. I will be back next week though, so chat to you soon.